I tried to... My freaking headphones slammed into my glasses.
And you try to grab them and end up smacking yourself in the face?
Yes, pretty much. They smacked into my glasses. Like, there was nothing... I don't know what happened there. It just happened.
I wore glasses from the age of 7 to almost 30. So almost 23 years of wearing glasses. And then I got PRK, which is just like LASIK. It's just instead of cutting a flap and the epithelium to get to the lens to reshape it with the laser, they actually shave the epithelium with what looks like an electronic toothbrush. No joke.
I don't know what epithelium is, so that explanation.
It's the very, very top layer of your eye before you get to the lens.
So they do it with like a toothbrush looking thing instead of a laser?
Oh, well, no. It's the only difference between LASIK and PRK is how they get to the lens. One, they cut a little flap with a knife, and then the other, they use the toothbrush thing. And both you use the exact same laser to reshape your lens. And when you do when you get the procedure done, you can actually smell your eyeball burn.
I've heard of that.
Wicked.
I've heard of that before. But yeah, actually, surprise. These actually aren't. I wear contacts. These are my blue light blocking glasses that I use that help keep my eyes nice and lubricated and not get migraines. That's basically what I wear.
We're supposed to help kind of keep me from getting headaches, but didn't really help too much.
That's a bummer. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I blame you. You owe me $40.
Oh, that's your problem. You bought them for $40. Mine were like $90 or $80.
Oh, jeez.
That's the problem. Oh. Actually, it may not be the problem. Maybe they just didn't work for you. That's also a possibility.
Yeah. It is. good morning, everybody, and welcome to Ophthalmology here on LR Mornings with Kyle and...
Dr. Joseph Jammer Medina.
You just had to make yourself the doctor.
We're not going to make you the doctor. Come on.
Well, it is my show.
I'm gonna fuck. I'm all about me.
I'm that old research doctor. I don't treat patients anymore. Like, I run an office and my name's on it, but like, I don't. You know what I'm saying? Like those doctors that have a practice, but they've got so many fucking PAs. They don't do anything themselves anymore, but sign off on the PA shit.
Yeah, they're like the big picture people. The big picture people, and then they're running the stuff up top. They're pulling the strings, not necessarily down in the trenches.
No, I'm talking like in private practice. So not even at like a hospital. I'm talking like some like ophthalmology.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I'm just saying like they're not like getting hands on. They're basically exactly. Just the figurehead running the actual business.
Done their time. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Those guys. That's
we spent way too much time on this. I'm just throwing that out there right now. Way too much time has been spent talking about this eye doctor bullshit. So actually, I have a question for you. Guardians of the Galaxy is happening, right? Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And yes. James Gunn, this is not a huge surprise. I think we all kind of expected it. He confirmed that somebody will die. Not the biggest. Yes. People die in that movie in those movies all the time. A lot of people died in the first one. A lot of people died in the second one. Like, it was that dark moment when, who was it that, oh yeah, the rest of the, what's Taserface and his crew essentially took over the Ravagers.
People out into the vacuum of space.
That shit was dark. Yeah. That was probably, that affected me in a way that I didn't expect. And I didn't freaking turn off my phone. Forgive me for that. They didn't, anyways, so when you say someone's going to die, it's not really clear what level of character is going to die. But my assumption here from Gunn is that when he says someone's going to die, it's going to be someone that the audience cares about, right? So I basically went down a whole little rabbit hole of like, all right, so who is he talking about? Who are the potential people who are going to die? I don't think we're going to get like a Quicksilver. I don't think we're going to get a character who was introduced in that movie and dies in the same movie. I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm looking at potential side characters that could die, and the only one that pops up is he's Kraglin, right? Kraglin is the potential one. He's the former Ravager turned Guardian who we didn't see for some reason or another in the Avengers movies. We don't know what his deal is, why he's gone, if he's off on a mission. We don't know. Whatever. However, of course, he's not the only possibility. Let's talk about the main team for a bit. We have Mantis and Drax. Let's start with Gamora and Groot.
You know, Brian and I talked about this yesterday, right?
Yeah, I did, but I want to talk about what I said.
Okay. Okay, go ahead then.
Yeah, Gamora and Groot, I think, are safe.
Yeah.
Because they both died.
I really don't want to see a fucking... I don't want the search for Gamora. I really, really don't.
I mean, yeah, for the movie. But my point is she's not going to die. Like, they're not going to have her, because she already died. She died, they got a new one. I don't want to see her die again. Same with Groot. I don't want to see him die again. Mantis and Drax, I think, are safe as well because compared to the others, they're relatively two-dimensional. Would you agree?
I think Drax grew a little bit in Infinity War, but I think he would be a safe death.
Yeah.
I think he would be one that, you know, a lot of people would be like, "Oh, that sucked," but you know, they'd get over it.
I think the ones who are most likely to die are either Rocket or Nebula, because they both had really big arcs. Both of them really were important over the course of both Avengers movies, and are really primed to sacrifice themselves for their respective families. For Nebula, for her sister, and Rocket for the rest of the crew. Personally, I'm thinking, and also Rocket is being groomed, I guess, for lack of a better word, for sort of a big presence in the next movie. So he could potentially die, or Nebula could potentially die. So my guess is Rocket. I didn't listen to your podcast. What do you think?
We think Rocket because it would hold the most weight. You know, only thing standing in James Gunn's way is Disney and their merchandise desires.
I mean, you could still make toys of him. I guess you just can't make new ones. Maybe you could get Angel.
Rockets. Lightheartedly joking, but Disney could be like, no, because in the same Instagram AMA, Gunn said that he had no plans for a volume 4, mm-hmm. but both Brian and I thought Disney's going to create a new team of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm sure some older member is something likely to have as a tie back, and they might really want it to be a gray-haired rickety old Rocket. I almost said Ratchet. No,
Ratchet and Clank.
Lombax. Yeah, that's the Lombax from the video game. But Rocket holds the most weight, man.
I think so too.
If he dies, that'll upset a lot of people. We know if Groot dies, he can grow back basically as long as there's some sort of piece of
it. But Gunn did confirm that it is a completely different Groot. It's not the same Groot.
Yeah.
It's like basically a baby, like a child. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it is death.
But still you get a Groot that you could have in the future.
Sure.
So it's like, whatever. I don't think they'll kill Nebula unless they really do a fucking search for Gamora. The whole movie's about finding Gamora, which is,
I mean, she could die without it having to be search for Gamora. It could be, there could be stuff that leads to that. It doesn't have to be finding Gamora in order for that to be a potential thing.
I'd rather her find them while they're completely not even looking for her, and because I just
I agree with you.
Like such the easy area to go, and we really need to talk about some Adam Warlock here.
Oh yeah, it's true. Forgot about that.
Did yeah, they teased him big time in volume two. So to me, it's just like there's not enough time for both. But then again, look at Endgame. We managed to revisit almost every big
Marvel movie
phase of the Marvel universe to do the time heist.
Yeah, I mean, but so. I think it's different. Like it's not going to be 3 hours long. First of all, I don't think Search for Gamora is going to happen. Like I don't think you need to have that story in order to have the Nebula situation. That's what I'm saying. So I'm not worried about it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's smarter than that. Because I think that would be the obvious way to go. I'm trying to think, what was that thing? Something happened in the MCU similarly where you felt like they were going to spend a whole amount of time searching for a character and then they just came back. I think of Thor in Avengers where they had this whole thing. It's like, oh, he can't come back because, you know, the bridge was broken, right? Except in Avengers, it's just, oh, he's back. No explanation. Kind of like that. I'm wondering if we're going to get something similar to that, except hopefully more satisfactory, because I hated in Avengers when Thor came and there was no explanation. I'm like, what happened to the fucking thing with the sacrifice that meant nothing in Thor?
Said
it was bullshit. It was a bullshit. No, it was a bullshit excuse.
Dark magic and
that's bullshit.
Heimdall uses the same dark magic.
That was a bullshit. That was a bullshit excuse.
The dark magic.
No, that was a bullshit excuse. I will not accept it because they said you'll never see her again. The Hulk. Blah, 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 blah. Made no sense. Was silly.
Well, freaking what was it? Kenneth Branagh. He had no idea that these things were going to keep going.
Well, I'm saying I hated the way they did it. They could have done it better. In my opinion, in a way that was more set us the way that it didn't take away from the sacrifice of that first movie, because to me it is totally just got rid of all of the dramatic tension and stuff from that first one.
Maybe it really does take a lot out of Odin in order to be able to do that, which is why Loki is able to do what he does to him in the second Thor movie. Maybe it really does take that much out of him. So while they were reconstructing the Bifrost normally, because Loki went and started causing havoc, Odin was like, I have no choice now. I wasn't going to do this. I always could do it, but it's going to damn near kill me.
I think you're giving them too much credit. I don't think they connected those dots. That's the thing is, early on, like phase one through two, they were very loosey-goosey with the worlds there. They were like, it's good enough. But it wasn't until phase three where they really started to connect them.
Yeah, that's our head canon. Just like at the end of Avengers when they look at Thanos finally, or the other, which is the character's name, the Chitauri that serves Thanos directly, says to court them is to court death.
Mm-hmm.
And Thanos turns around and it's alluding to Thanos's infatuation with the character Death, which they never brought about, which I'm very happy.
Yeah, I'm happy too. I hated that.
I'm down with the way that they did.
Hated the Death character. It was so meaningless. It's interesting because the Infinity Gauntlet storyline, and honestly, a lot of crossovers. They don't feel like they're very like emotional. They just feel like they're kind of almost like a Christopher Nolan project where it's very sort of structurally sound and architected in a way, and it's more about like sort of working out the mind than it is about making you feel for the characters. And that's how I felt in Infinity Gauntlet, where I enjoyed reading it, but it wasn't like I didn't really care about what was happening. It was just I was interested to see what would happen. It felt very plot over character, for lack of a better term. And it didn't seem like it mattered too much about you giving a shit about the reasons why. It was just a matter of putting something forward that would challenge all the characters in some way.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but that's how I felt when reading it.
I think you were probably thinking Infinity War and Endgame gave a lot more emotion to the character of Thanos.
Definitely, for sure. Yeah. Though ironically, I do feel like Infinity War, for me, for the most part, I never felt like it was a super emotional movie. It felt like one of those crossovers where you just have all these threads sort of clashing together in a really cool way. And I remember thinking to myself, I didn't like that movie as much as like a lot of other people do. I thought it was really good. I thought it was about as good as you can expect from a crossover of that magnitude. I think that's what I wrote in my review. I think I gave it like a B or B minus or something, where it was considering what it did, it was very impressive, but I had almost no emotional grounding in what was happening because of all the things that were going. And Endgame, that shit sang. It was so good. It was so emotional, and the weight was there. Like, all the stuff that I thought they were missing from Infinity War came in Endgame. And it really bothered me because I feel like Infinity War wasn't a complete story. Like, yes, technically it was, but it didn't feel like one to me. And I was thinking, okay, so then the second half of the story is Endgame, which I think is cool. But then I watched Endgame, and I was like, you know, Endgame felt like a complete story, but Infinity War didn't feel like a complete story. So now I just feel like I got 1.5 stories, and now I'm just confused. So it made me almost like Infinity War a little bit less in retrospect.
You can't get any of there's payoff in Infinity War with the death of Gamora and the death of Vision. There's raw emotion there, and then the dusting, you figure those people are eventually gonna come back, but it's kind of shocking the first time you see it, the dusting.
I didn't get the emotion people got from the dusting, because I remember thinking to myself, everyone's like, oh, Spider-Man, and I'm like, he's coming back, calm down, people, they're not leaving.
We know the release slate.
Yeah, like, come on, you know what's happening here. Like, they're not gonna get rid of Black Panther. They're not gonna
You can't get to all of the wonderful stuff in Endgame without Infinity War.
Oh yeah,
you can't just have Endgame.
Oh yeah, I completely agree with you. My point is that, like, it's still at the end of the day, Infinity War didn't feel like a complete story, and Endgame, it felt like a complete story in the same way that, you know, Captain America: Civil War felt like a complete standalone story, but it was obviously given more magnitude thanks to all that came before it. It was about as good of a standalone as you can expect from any movie, but Infinity War just didn't feel like that to me because of the way it ended. It just didn't. I have a really weird opinion about that movie. Like I said, I think it's good. I think it's really good. I just don't think it's great.
I think you just want to be in with the out crowd.
No, I don't think I... The thing is, I don't really argue with people enough online to care.
Yeah. All I know is that the audience experience in Infinity War opening night was pretty cool, but I don't think any movie will ever elicit the response from an audience that Endgame did.
Mm-hmm. The portal scene.
Yeah, all of it. The portal scene, even
Captain America hammer.
Captain America and the hammer. Captain Marvel coming in. People really enjoyed. Spider-Man going into insta kill. People enjoyed. And then of course Tony's demise. Like, all of that. Like when they set Tony up. And he can't move or anything like that. My theater's dead silence except for like all probably 30-40 people sniffling and weeping and I don't know that was an experience. Mm-hmm. to be in that film opening night with people that had never seen it.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I thought that movie was just exceptional. Like, it was, I think It's the best one for me. It's my favorite one for sure. And I genuinely, all
the MCU or yeah, just Avengers of all films?
Easily of the Avengers film, but also I think of all the MCU movies. Hmm. Like, I think it's definitely up there for me. Like, it's just the fact that they had the confidence to sort of sit and just have these long emotional scenes in the first, 45 minutes to an hour, and yet have it not be boring. Like, yet it's just blazing by. The time is blazing. Like, literally that first 45 minutes before they go into the time heist is my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, they're sitting there eating ice cream and then, like, figure out there's three stones in New York on a certain year and shut the front door.
Yeah, yeah, like a lot of great scenes.
This is why one of the reasons why I think the Russos deserved a best director.
Oh, I agree.
Nod.
I agree.
Because the job of directing that movie took skill that honestly I don't think the Academy's favorite directors, these big directors, could ever jumble that many main characters, could never blend so many digital and real sets and worlds. I think they directed their asses off.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's ever, not even big war movies, I think of movies like Gettysburg, where you had thousands of reenactors out on the field, but they were reenactors. They did that professionally. You just basically said, go, reenact, and we've got, our certain scenes over here that we're filming with main characters and stuff. But like that's nothing compared to what they did with Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, it is ironic how I feel like so many of the best director Oscars go to smaller movies, when I feel like it's harder to do in these bigger ones, when you have to get this emotion from these actors, especially considering these actors didn't even read the scripts ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that they were lazy. They weren't allowed to.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to. Right. That was just that was just the way it's done. It's funny, actually, changing the subject 100%. It reminds me, there was this post. I don't know who it was. Was it Kotaku? It was some other outlet. And they wrote an article saying Final Fantasy VII Remake voice actors weren't given their scripts ahead of time. And I'm like, they're never given the scripts ahead of time. They literally just go in there. You have a director sitting on the other side of the glass who has like a binder or like a tablet full of all the lines mm-hmm. they need, the context, and they basically tell the actor, here is like the time frame you have to fit it in. Here's how you need to say it, blah, 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 blah. They basically tell them what to say and how to say it in the context. And then the actors just go.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because it's just like, yeah, that's not new. Like, there's nothing special about Final Fantasy VII Remake and their cast. That's
voice acting for almost everything from The Simpsons to Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah. It's funny. Growing up, it used to be different, right? Back in like the 90s and before, didn't they used to have actors working together? Because I always remember the featurettes always had them recording like seemingly like across from each other in like a circle.
Some things did but yeah, as time has gone on, you might see like two characters in the same room. They might try to book, like for Wreck-It Ralph, I don't know if they did, but they might try to book John C. Reilly. Thank you. They might try to book Reilly and Silverman at the same time, but all the other side characters, they're just going to come in whenever they can.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would like to think that's what a studio would like to do. But I know, like in the Simpsons, I don't think they all get together anymore. I think sometimes there might be two or three of them in a studio, but they're all waiting to just record their own lines.
Yeah, I mean, like in anime and video game, it's exactly the same. Like, it's just as described, where You go in there, you have a one end, or they have two doors. One goes to the booth. One goes to the freaking, to the other side of the booth with the sound engineer and the director and whoever else is in there, probably the client or whoever's the studio has for the client. And then they just go through lines. It's very unsexy and very like just to the point. It's all about just efficiency. And that's why voice actors aren't really given the proper respect they deserve, where they literally just have to conjure up on the spot. You know, with a lot of movies, you're able to understand the trajectory of the character and their arc. With a lot of animation and video games, you don't have that. You literally just have a line and a direction, and that's it. Maybe you'll have an idea of where this character is going, but chances are you're not going to be in it enough to fully understand at which point in that emotional journey you are. So you just kind of have to do your best.
Yeah. A lot of times the and this goes credit to the voice actors and a little bit on the directors. They do a decent job of blending it in. You watch old episodes of Futurama. You watch American Dad. You watch even Rick and Morty, even though it's like two guys doing the majority of the voices, they do a good job. And then you get to some dubbed animes, not all, but some I've seen to where it's like, yeah, either the director was sick that day, or you guys were like on your 20th take and you were like, fuck it.
Or they were on a ridiculous budget. I think anime time frames are so crunched, especially I'm sure now. I haven't been involved in the last 5 or 6 years or so of the industry, but like I'm pretty sure with the simuldubs, first of all, they're likely not dealing with complete animation. They're also likely working on super crunch time frames where they just have to go. So it's just a matter of just getting it out there, and maybe they'll revise it later on the actual streaming release or Blu-ray release or whatever. But yeah, it's rough.
All I know is that last year I got to see one of the coolest animes out there, and when they said that season 2 would actually be happening this year, it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah, I'm surprised, because usually it takes a few years for that to happen. Like One Punch Man took a few years, and it had a downgrade in animation because it changed studios.
Well, I'm still hoping it holds out true, and sometime late summer I get to see Dr. Stone, the Stone Wars, because that anime just, after the first four, five episodes, just takes off running in such a cool, fun route. And then you find out, like, at the end of the show, the warning, which you should put, in Dr. Strange words, you should put the warnings first. All of the chemicals and mixtures and science and shit that they're doing is real.
Mm-hmm.
In that cartoon, but the warning comes at the end. Unlike Mythbusters, which
don't,
I watched.
Don't make the things that they're making. It's dangerous.
Yeah, don't. You're supposed to say that at first. not because who watches the credits of the anime? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, if only.
I'm always like, you know, next episode when I'm on Funimation. But during that horrible experience I had this weekend, I watched about 13, 14 total hours of Mythbusters.
Jesus, that sounds like a nightmare.
Because after about 36 hours, you can't really function very, very well. So all you can kind of do is just veg out. Like, you're kind of like a bumbling idiot. Like, my speech was way worse than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, folks, don't.
Don't not sleep. Don't not sleep. Just sleep.
Figure something out. What? This is a side note, and I just gotta say, because I know we got a lot of fans that follow me, and I get people that ask how I'm doing online, which I appreciate you all. But you know, the same meds that I was taking that were giving me so much, like, too much sleep issues, I was taking all of those at the right times. I wouldn't fucking sleep. Mm-hmm. My body just would not go to sleep. It was crazy. So, anyways, thanks everyone out there for listening. Jammer, thank you for being on the show as always. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure you are subscribed to the LRM Online Podcast Network, especially for May 20th. We are having a little one-year anniversary celebration of LR Mornings. So make sure you're subscribed to that, as well as to get access to lots of other great shows like Breaking Geek Radio, Los Fanboys, which is also generally live on YouTube on Fridays. So make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel as well. And of course, always, always go to lrmonline.com every day for all your entertainment news and needs.
You.
Jammer, where can people find you at online?
You can find me on Twitter at JamTheWriter. All of my novel stuff under the name AJ Cerner on Amazon. And yeah, that's about it.
I'm going to have to get offline with you and ask you about that one day.
What?
The AJ Cerner thing.
Okay. Why? What do you need to ask?
Just curiosity. I don't know if it's something you want to discuss on air or not.
Oh, we're fine.
Oh, we already ended the show.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.